are back. Welcome back, everyone, to the Higher Standards Podcast, Episode 9. I am Mr. Jason Roskam. With me, as always, are Renee.
Hi, guys.
And Chad.
Standards finally back.
Yes, it is. And with Standard comes a lot of snow up here in the Northeast. We're on the verge of getting slammed by what they're calling a blizzard, I guess. Renee, how's the outlook for you guys down in Delaware?
We are right on the line between like 3 to 6 and then 6 to 12.
Okay.
So it kind of depends on how fast this comes in and where the front winds up being as to what we get. But we're getting something.
Okay. And that's inches of snow for people who don't normally get snow. If you're over on the West Coast or maybe in another country that doesn't see a lot of snow, she means, you know, what was it, 3 to 6 inches?
Yes.
Of snow. Yeah. So, Chad, how are we looking in Jersey?
It looks like we're going to get about 3 to 5 tonight, but hopefully that's all we got. I don't like snow, personally.
Loser.
Yeah, well, it's funny, you know, I'm from California originally, and the first time I ever saw snow was when I got stationed at New Jersey after I joined the Air Force. So that was kind of weird. But I'm actually down in D.C. right now, and no, it was not for the Star City Open. My squadron tends to panic whenever we get snow, and they moved the whole squadron down here to D.C. So that's where I am. I'm sitting in a hotel room. Hopefully the Wi-Fi holds up for the rest of the cast. If I start roboting, I apologize.
Too bad it wasn't a couple days earlier. You could have made it to the SCG.
I know, right?
You wouldn't have had to worry about bridges.
No. But it is what it is. So here we are once again, Higher Standards. Just wanted to make a couple of announcements before we get into it. First, on mtgbrodeals.com, a website that Renee and I both write for, we're trying to get episodes of our podcast on there in high definition. When we upload to MTGcast, we have to do it in the lowest possible quality due to space restrictions. But on Bro Deals, we don't have those restrictions. So when I produce the final audio output, I'm doing it in both the low quality for MTGcast and a high quality version for Bro Deals. So hopefully every episode from here on out will also go up on Bro Deals in a higher quality. So if you want to hear us in all of our glory, go check it out over there. And again, go to mtgbrodeals.com anyway, because Renee and I write for the website, and I'm making my triumphant return this week. I've been on a bit of a hiatus, and I am back. So, speaking of...
We also have listener Eric, who now writes for the site as well.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
From Sweden,
yeah.
So...
Yes. Yeah, Eric's been a big contributor to the show since the beginning. He's sent us constant emails, and he's been on the Facebook group. You know, thanks, Eric, and welcome to the team. One other thing, speaking of Bro Deals, Jack LaCroix, who is one of the, what would you call him, Renee, as far as Bro Deals?
He is, I would call him the head editor.
The head editor of MTG Bro Deals. Tonight is actually his last night on the Monday Night Magic podcasts. You know, he's moving on just because he's got a lot going on, and I'm sure he'll be back at some point, but for right now, he's taking a hiatus from Monday Night Magic. And Jack, I just wanted to say personally thank you for everything. If it wasn't for Jack and being on Monday Night Magic, I wouldn't be here doing this podcast, and I also wouldn't be writing for mtgbrodeals.com. Thank you so much, Jack. Appreciate it. Good luck with everything going forward. I know he's getting into some big, important things. Big piece of news last week was the release of the updated banned and restricted list.
Oh, so much hate out there.
Yep, yep. Chad, was anything banned or restricted in Standard last week?
No. Finally.
Okay, well, moving on to the Star City Games Open. We had the Star City Open in D.C. this week. It was another one of their new two-day events, and it was the first weekend of the new Standard with Fate Reforged. Guys, what do you think? You think Fate Reforged had a pretty big impact?
Yeah, I think a lot of decks evolved and came out of the woodwork.
Yeah.
I think so, too. There are a lot of, it's not so much completely new decks as much as better tweaked older decks that have now risen to the top.
Okay. Just taking a look at the top eight, 14 different cards from Fate Reforged were represented in the top eight to include 5 copies of Ugin. I know last week we had an over-under on Ugin. I picked 4, and Chad and I took the under. Renee and Trevor took the over, so congratulations, Trevor and Renee. You were correct.
Five
copies of Ugin in the top eight. Now, would either of you like to take a guess as to what card had the single most number of showings in the top eight without looking at the list?
Okay, without looking at the list, I'm going to say Valor's Dance.
Okay, Renee?
I'm going to say Ugin, actually.
Okay, well, Chad was correct. Valorous Dance had 10 copies in the top eight. Ugin had 5. Number 2, though, was Tassiger with 7.
Yeah, that was going to be my second.
Yeah, so let's hop right into the list. Taking first place, we had Gerard Fabiano with, what did he have, Renee?
He had Sultai Control.
All right, let's hear it.
All right, so we've got 4 Satyr Wayfinder. That's it for creatures. That's it, we're done.
That's control.
We've got 7 Planeswalkers as 2 Ashiok, a Garuk Apex Predator, 2 Kiora the Crashing Wave, and 2 Ugin the Spirit Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
We've got 24 spells, so 4 Bioblight, 4 Dig Through Time, 2 Disdainful Stroke, 3 Hero's Downfall, 2 Murderous Cut, 2 Soul Tide Charm, 2 Crux of Fate, 1 Interpret the Signs, 2 Rakasha's Secret, and 2 Thoughtseize.
Alright, so we've already got a bunch of new cards right off the bat. Though Rakshasa's Secret is not new in Fate Reforged, it is a Khaza Tarkir card that has not seen any play in Standard as far as I know. Hell, I don't think that was even a good limited card. So, Renee, what is Rakshasa's Secret?
Alright, so it is 2 and a black. Target opponent discards 2 cards. Put the top 2 cards of your library into your graveyard.
Alright, so it's Mind Rot with a self-mill aspect.
Yes, and then another one we haven't seen before is Interpret the Signs,
okay,
which is from the Theros block,
and
that is 5 and a blue. Scry 3, then reveal the top card of your library. Draw cards equal to that card's converted mana cost.
So in a deck like this, you can really draw a lot of cards with that,
yes,
with the right scry. It's interesting, though, because it's also a sorcery, so that's typically something that control wouldn't want to do. You would think, you know, tapping 6 on their own turn just to draw some cards.
Yeah.
If it's to get a murderous cut and then you, like, exile a bunch of stuff, you don't necessarily need more mana. Mm.
That's a good point for any of the Delph spells. And looking at his deck, he's got 7 spells that can net him 7 or more cards in his hand.
Mm. Savage. And, you know, you mentioned all the Planeswalkers in there. Some Planeswalkers we haven't seen in a while. Garruk Apex Predator is one of them. And Kiora the Crashing Wave, another that, you know, we've seen fringe play here and there, but not too much in Standard. And now here it is, taking down the first big Standard tournament of the new season. So,
yes.
What do you guys think? You guys like those, the inclusion of all those Planeswalkers?
I always love Super Friends decks.
Yeah, Super Friends are fun. I see in his sideboard he's got 2 Tassigars, and it feels like either he sided them in every game or he would want them in the main deck, maybe over a Singleton Boblite or something like Hero's Downfall. And I don't know, it just seems like he's able to get Tasker out so much faster. And while we're on the subject, I want to make a public apology.
Yes.
Saying that to Tasker, the Golden Fang, in all your glory, you definitely showed me the way.
Yes. You may remember last week, Chad was pretty down on Tasker overall. I think the rest of us were all, you know, on board, but Chad just wanted none of it. And I think it's become pretty clear that he is going to be a force to be reckoned with in Standard. I do agree with you, Chad. I don't understand why he wouldn't be in the main, especially since he's running the Satyr Wayfinders in the main, because I watched on stream he dropped a Tassigar on turn 3 multiple times.
Yeah, it almost seems, and I don't know how SCG does it, it seems like every game they put on Twitch seems to go to game 3. I don't know how they make it happen, but kudos to them. But yeah, every,
like, a conspiracy in the works right there.
It could be.
All right, we'll discuss that at another time.
But it seemed like every game 2 and game 3 that Gerard was on the camera, which I think was 2 times over the course of the day, he had Tassigar. So if it seemed like he just sided it in every game.
Yeah. So,
and I mean, that may have been a call for the beginning of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you don't want to try and jam too many new things that you haven't gotten to test in a deck.
Right.
But at the same time, you feel that they're going to be good. It's okay if you have to side them in all the time.
Yep.
Yeah.
And Renee, go ahead and finish off the sideboard for us.
So we also have 2 Rakshasha Death Dealer, 2 Feed the Clan, 2 Negate, 2 Farika's Cure, 1 Sultai Charm, 1 Pelucranos, 1 Salumgar, the Drifting Death, 1 Drown in Sorrow, and 1 Thoughtseize.
Okay, and you also mentioned Feed the Clan. That's another card that I don't think has really seen much play in Standard up till now, even though it's a Khaza Tarkir card. Why don't you read that one for us?
So it's 1 and a green, instant. You gain 5 life. Ferocious, you gain 10 life instead if you control a creature with power 4 or greater.
So it's not bad. Obviously, he's got that in there for, you know, the burn or aggressive matchups. How often is he really going to have the Ferocious, though?
Not Well, let's see here. What do we got?
After sideboard, he's bringing in a lot of creatures.
He is, and then also if he by chance gets to ult Kiora.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Those 9/9s.
Oh, yeah.
Although if you ult her and you aren't winning, there's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen, though, and a friend of mine used to always give me crap. He said, if you ever ultimate Nicol Bolas and you lose that game, then something's wrong. Well, I have hit a Nicol Bolas ultimate in an old standard game and lost because I was so low on life at that point. Like, I was playing against an aggressive burn deck or something like that. I was down to maybe one life. Hit the ultimate, but still lost because he just topped a burn spell. So it is possible, and that could be one way that you might ultimate Kiora and not win. But something else about this deck is I was watching him on stream, and he would bring in pretty much every creature in his sideboard against creature-based decks like he did in the finals.
Yeah.
So he'd bring in both Death Dealers, the Pelucrano, Solemgar, Tassigar. So he really became a more creature-heavy deck post-board.
Quote-unquote creature-heavy with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 creatures. Creature-heavy.
More creatures than he had to start with. More than the 4 that he begins the game with. And yeah, I agree with Chad. I think Tassigar should be in the main for this. I don't know what you cut, but yeah, something's got to give. I think he's too good to not run in the main.
He's also running where Renee said Farika's Cure in the side. I think that's a good tech right now, seeing how there's a lot of small creatures with the Monastery Mentors and the red-white running around.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's already running 4 Bile Blights in the main. He's running a crap load of removal in the main, so why not add a couple more?
Yeah.
And he's pretty well set against the aggressive decks. And he was. He pretty much destroyed his opponent in games 2 and 3 in the finals. Speaking of which, his opponent in the finals was Danny Goldstein running red-white aggro. I will go ahead and go through this list because this is...
Before you start going over the list, I need to ask you, on Facebook, on our Facebook group, which is Higher Standards, you claimed that red-white was going to win it all.
I did. And yep, I made that prediction early last week.
I know, and it was spot on going into the finals. Now, were you rooting for this deck when you were watching it like you would for your team, like San Francisco?
Absolutely, and when it became pretty clear during game 3 that Danny wasn't going to win, I actually turned it off, much like I turn off the football game when the 49ers are losing, like, screw this, I'm not watching the rest. So yeah, I was pulling for Danny. I really thought he had a better matchup. But Gerard's sideboard is just too good against this kind of a deck. And Danny really drew poorly in game 3 also. He was stuck with, you know, 3 lands and 1 burn spell at one point in the game. And it was just bad.
Well, on the stream, it seemed like they were even they thought that red-white was going to win because it was such a bad matchup for the Sultai control, or at least what they thought of the Sultai control.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Gerard clearly proved them wrong. And despite Danny's bad draws, I think post-board, he still had such a good matchup against him. So, you know, kudos to Gerard, and he's kind of been on a hot streak lately too. He won a recent Grand Prix, and he's been around a lot lately, so he's kind of on the up and up. Local player too, from New Jersey.
Yes.
And he went to University of Delaware, I think.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
So he should be our best friend.
Yeah. All right, so moving on to Danny Goldstein's red-white aggro deck. I'm going to go through this real quick. It's very similar to, you know, the Sam Black decks from the previous season with just a couple of new additions. We've got 4 Goblin Rabble Master, 4 Monastery Mentor, card I'm still kind of down on, but whatever. 3 Seeker of the Way, 1 Soulfire Grandmaster. We've got 2 Outpost Siege, a card that I've been high on for quite a while. I did not see this put in much work, but he's got 2 in the main. 2 Collateral Damage, another card I've been pretty big on lately. 4 Lightning Strikes, 3 Magma Jet, 4 Raise the Alarm, 4 Stoke the Flames, 2 Valorous Stance, and 4 Hordling Outburst. So he's producing a lot of tokens. He's got your Goblin Rabble Master, Monastery Mentor, and a whole bunch of burn. In the sideboard, he's got 2 Hushwing Griffs. Nice tech there. 1 Storm Breath Dragon, 2 Erase, 2 Magma Sprays, 2 Wild Slash. We've also seen quite a few Wild Slashes this weekend. 2 Elspeth Sun's Champion, 2 End Hostilities, and 2 Glare of Heresy, running 23 lands total. I like this deck, and again, I predicted red-white to come out on top this weekend. Almost got there. It's just a good, solid deck. I don't really know what more there is to say about it. Nothing surprising in here. Just a lot of good synergy.
I'm a little surprised that with 25 spells, he wasn't running any Monastery Swift Spears.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know. I guess he needed the room for...
The mentors, like maybe he was running the mentors over the Swift Spears. I just think that going forward, if we're going to see this kind of aggro, then Control is going to have a better matchup because there's no one drop.
Yeah. But I can see this deck kind of grinding you out a little bit too, whereas if you're running Monastery Swift Spear, that's the type of deck that you want to win by turn four. If you don't, then you're probably dead. So whereas this, you know, this can go the long game if necessary. And especially looking at his sideboard, he's running two Elspeth Sun's Champion in a deck with 23 lands, so that's pretty ballsy.
Yeah.
So what I'm actually surprised about with this deck, after seeing somebody play something similar this past weekend, was there's no Porphyros in the sideboard.
No.
Because on those long games, every time the Monastery Mentor triggers and the token comes into the battlefield or Rabble Master, Porphyros does 2 damage to your opponent, from what I understand.
Well, yeah, and I think that could have been a good replacement for Outpost Siege. I think Outpost Siege is a better sideboard card than it is a main. So yeah, I think Porphyros would have fit right into that slot very nicely.
Yeah, and I mean, it would be nuts. With Monastery Mentor and Hordling Outburst, that'd be 8 damage right there.
Yeah, the only problem is you're never going to have Devotion with him. Like, unless you have all 4 of your Goblin Rabble Masters on the board, he'll never be a creature.
I don't think the goal is to have him a creature.
No, but it's a nice backup plan if you are running those kind of guys.
And at that point, you put the Outpost Sieges on, so you have the extra possible Devotion.
Yeah. So what do you guys think? Do you think this guy has a good chance against that Sultai control list, or was it right that Fabiano won? Do you think? I don't know.
I think it does. I think Fabiano being turning into a creature package the second and third game puts a little dampen on this deck right here. But if this deck wins turn or game one, then it would put Fabiano in a really hard corner.
Okay. Moving on to third place, Chad, what was that?
All right, in third place we've got Abzan Aggro, played by Capitalized Hunter Nance.
I noticed that. That's odd.
The only fully capitalized. Maybe that's how he wrote it, like he typed out this deck list. Yeah, congratulations on third place, and he's got 23 creatures, starting with 4 Fleecemane Lion, 4 Rakshasa Death Dealer, 4 Siege Rhino, 3 Wingmate Rock, 3 Courser of Krufix, 3 Anafenza the Foremost, and 2 Tassigar the Golden Fang. Planeswalkers, he's got 1 Soren Solemn Visitor. He's running a full 25 lands. Spells, 11. 2 Abzan Charm, 3 Bioblight, 4 Heroes Downfall, and 2 Thoughtseize. In the sideboard, he's got 1 Back to Nature for all that green-black devotion that was running around.
Mm-hmm.
Or green-black constellation, sorry. 1 Bioblight, 1 Murderer's Cut, 1 Elspeth Sun's Champion, 1 Liliana Vess, 1 Nissa Worldwaker, 1 more Soren Solemn Visitor.
All those singleton walkers.
Yeah. 4 Drown in Sorrow, 3 Glare of Heresy, and 1 Thoughtseize.
Okay. Looks like this is very similar to the Abzan Aggro list we saw before Fate Reforged, with a few new additions.
Because yeah. Tassigar.
Yes.
Yeah, it's got Tassigar. I think that we were looking at 2 Wingmate Rocks in most of the Abzan Aggros before.
Yeah, because 3 Wingmate Rocks, I don't know, is that really considered aggro at that point? 4 Siege Rhinos, 3 Wingmate Rocks, he's a little on the big side.
Yeah.
If you consider Tasker not being 6 mana, then I guess that you could call it aggro. But what is the production of Delve? Like, he's got 11 spells, so the Bioblights might help, but...
He's probably just counting on you killing his early creatures, honestly. Yeah. You know, He's got a few fetch lands. He's got the full 4 Windswept Teeths, and that's it for fetch lands. Oh, not even in Evolving Wilds this time. So, yeah, he's got the 4 Windswept Teeths, some removal, like you said, and, yeah, I think he probably just expects some of his early creatures to get killed.
Yeah.
Which is probably true, you know?
Yeah. And it's not bad to cast Tassigar and then Siege Rhino, make your opponent choose which one they don't want to see.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, again, Tassigar showing his face. He's here to stay. Now, something that's noticeably absent is, what's his name? Warden of the First Tree. He's not in this list, and we just, I would assume we all figured he'd be perfect for this type of deck. So why is he not here?
Because somebody wanted to play with Tassigar.
Well, could you not play with both?
I mean, I could see Warden in for at least 1 Anafenza, maybe even 2, and a Wingmate Rock. So running two Wingmate Rocks and one Anafenza and then three Wardens. But it might just be, he might have made that choice because he's running a lot of tap lands. He might not want to hit the first land drop untapped and cast them.
Yeah, I mean, he's only running one forest in the main, and he's got some lands that come in untapped that he could use to cast it on turn one, but not many options, not nearly as much as you would want, so that's probably it, you know, his mana base wouldn't support that.
And I think even just looking at the mana base, this isn't an aggro list. It's got 25 lands. That's too many for really what an aggro list wants to be, and they all come into play tap, so it's putting you behind a turn, which, you know, there's nothing wrong with the tap lands, but there's only... nine non-tapped lands besides Urborg.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You look at it, and he's got a lot of big creatures, but you can cast them all early. He's got the Fleece Mane, the Rakshasa Death Dealer, Anafenza, all big bodies you can cast pretty early in the game. And then I guess, you know, his whole point is just swinging in with all these big threats as soon as he can.
And something that I just noticed, and you guys might see it now, in his 25 lands, he's got four Windswept Heath, but only one forest and two plains. So, unless he's got Urborg out, the Windswept Heath is basically a delve trigger.
Yeah, and he does have the two Urborg in there, so it's possible to get it. But yeah, that seems awfully greedy.
Yeah.
This seems like a very greedy land base. Yeah, and, only running three basics.
And a greedy sideboard. I mean, all those one of planeswalkers, like, yeah, I guess Sorin didn't do it this game, so maybe Nissa will help me out. I don't know.
Yeah, it seems to me like maybe he just wasn't sure where he wanted to be, so... Maybe just throw one of everything in there and it'll all work itself out.
Yeah, and it did. netting him third place.
Yep, and we had another Abzan aggro in here, so why don't we go ahead and skip down to sixth place and pull that up and just kind of compare these two lists and see what we're looking at as far as differences go.
Now, Andrew Boswell, he's a local player for the East Coast, and he's a very good player. I'm just going to give him props on our podcast right now. He's a very good player.
Yeah, get a room. Anyway, let's talk about it.
Maybe I can come down to D.C. and hang out with you.
No. Not me, with Andrew Boswell. I don't know where he is, but... All right, anyway, so what are we looking at that's different here? I can see a few differences right off the bat.
Warden of the First Tree.
Yes, there's the Warden of the First Tree, and he's also got another one drop in here.
Soldier of the Pantheon.
Mm-hmm. Much lighter on the removal. He's also got two Boonsaders, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And then he's got, you know, your normal package, Fleece Mane, Rakshasa, Siege Rhino, Anafenza. No Corsair of Krufix.
I think that's fine.
You think so?
Yeah, because on that third, you don't want to waste a turn putting down a Corsair of Krufix, which is more for a long game, mid-range type plan, versus this just wants to keep boosting up either the Warden and play another thing on turn three, or, you know, be able to... Maybe somehow, well, turn three, get that Anafenza out, be able to Abzan Charm on turn three and put counters on things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, four Valorous Dance in this one. How many Valorous Dance were in Hunter's deck? None.
I don't believe, yeah.
None, which is surprising because watching the stream all weekend, Valorous Dance was huge. A lot of different decks were running it, and after playing with it in the pre-release, I love that card. I practiced with it a little bit this last week, and, man, it's fantastic. It's great in creature decks. It's great in control decks. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to jump on Chad's bandwagon and say that I like this deck a lot more.
Yeah, you know, I kind of agree. You're talking Boswell's deck, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I agree. I actually like it more as well.
I like it. My one, and I kind of get it because he's got the four Soldier of Pantheons. My one thing is he's running four Mana Confluence, and... It seems like with all the mana available we have right now, he would have hit the mana if it was something else. So it could be for the one drops, and that's probably exactly what it is for.
Yeah, because this is a real aggro deck. He wants to drop an untapped land every turn, and he wants to be casting something and attacking every turn, as opposed to Hunter's deck where his big turns are turns three and four kind of deal.
Yeah.
And I'd be really interested to hear Andrew's opinion on how the Mana Confluences put him in the game that he had versus Danny Goldstein with the red-white aggro.
Right.
And if he felt that doing damage to himself hurt him more if he was more reluctant to play the mana confluences. Just get that kind of perception from him would be great, I think.
All right, Chad, get on that.
Yeah, Chad.
All right. All right. I will see if I can contact Andrew Basel.
Okay. In fourth place, we had White Blue Heroic with not a single new Fate Reforged card in it. So we're not even going to talk about it other than it was Logan Mize, fourth place, White Blue Heroic. Stop playing that deck, people.
Logan Mize has been showing up with a lot of decks and placing very well.
Okay.
We don't care.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. All right. I get that. Maybe he didn't go to the pre-release and didn't get any new cards. So, but he still took it somewhere with all the new cards running around. I mean, it's still a viable deck to play, but yes. We all hate it. I'm going to agree. We all hate it. It's still a viable deck.
It is. It is. And, you know, kudos to him for sticking with something that worked and not even thinking about Fate Reforged. He's like, you know what? Screw it. I got this deck. I'm going to play it. And he almost took it to the end. So good on him.
Yeah.
Does anybody want to talk about fifth place?
Is that the Sultai Ramp one?
It is.
Yes.
Ooh. This has a lot of other my favorite friends in it.
All right, go ahead then, Renee. This is all you.
We've got two Hornet Queen.
What?
Pearl-like Ancient, Sylvan Caryatid, Corsair of Kruphix, and one Tassigar the Golden Fang. Then we have one Garrick Apex Predator and two Ugin Spirit Dragon.
Okay.
And then in spells, we have three Frontier Siege. Yay!
Yeah, Siege is showing up.
Three Dig Through Time, three Heroes Downfall, two Sultai Charm, three Crux of Fate, three Thoughtseize, two Treasure Cruise, and one Worst Fears.
Yes.
Wait, what? Well, hold on. Back up Worst Fears? Well, what is that?
I'm going to let Chad talk about it since it's his favorite card ever.
All right, Worst Fears is a card that wins you games out of nowhere. Okay. So Worst Fears is 7 and a black, a sorcery. You control target player during that player's next turn, and then exile Worst Fears.
So it's basically the old Soren Markov ultimate.
Or
Mindslaver.
Yes.
But you only get it once, and it's a hell of an expensive sorcery.
Yeah, but when you're ramping.
Yeah.
Yeah. My worst fear is that I get this card in my opening hand.
Yes.
So, yeah, looking at this main deck, this is all over the place. But it's value town, right?
It is value town.
Yeah.
I mean, a Pearl-like Ancient, really, in a non-control deck, that's a first, right?
Yeah.
Pearl-like Ancient in the same deck as a Sylvan Caryatid and Corsair of Kruphix.
That is a first, and that combo seems pretty good.
Yeah. Frontier Siege, another one that we touched on a little bit last week. Renee, you still liking this card?
Especially in this deck.
Yeah.
Oh my god, because in the early game, you pay, if you get one, you put it down for the extra 2/2 to your mana pool.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, or the green, double green. Later on in the game, when you have enough mana for Hornet Queen the next turn, you put it down for the dragons, and four Death Touch tokens fight their dudes.
Yep.
Plus the Hornet Queen. What?
Yeah, that seems pretty sick. Yeah. And what's interesting, though, he's got 25 lands. Not a single one of them is Nykthos. So he's not going with that type of devotion ramp.
No Nykthos, no, you know, lots of... There are quite a few double mana symbol guys in here, but it's not that kind of ramp.
Yeah. And he's got quite a bit of removal. He's got three Crux of Fate, which is interesting because he's running a decent amount of creatures.
Mm-hmm.
Three Dig Through Time. That's pretty savage. It's, you know, Garrick
and Treasure Cruise.
And Treasure Cruise, yeah. So, I don't know how he's expecting to fill up his yard. Am I missing something here?
I mean,
feel
why
like
you
he's
need
not
to fill
worried
up
about
your,
it. Yeah.
You're ramping. You don't need to fill up your yard.
That's true. Yeah. Forget that. Cast it the old school way.
Not only that, with Frontier Siege on cons, granting you two green every main phase, Tassigar becomes very value town when you have delve spells.
True. Very true. Mm. Yeah, it makes sense. I like this deck. This deck seems a lot of fun. I'm sure it could use some tweaking. I strongly disagree with Worst Fears being in the main, but this looks fun. This looks like something that I would love to throw together and take to an FNM or something.
Yeah, it looks like a very enjoyable game to play.
Yeah.
And on both sides, I mean, the opponent's going to be wondering what you're going to do next, and you're going to have fun doing everything you're casting.
And big winner of the weekend, Garrick Apex Predator. We're seeing him all over the place. You know, he was kind of in obscurity for a while, but with all these decks trying to ramp into Ugin, I guess they figured, screw it, we might as well throw a Garruk in there too.
Yeah, that's exactly what I think too. I think that Ugin unlocked Garruk in this, just because Sultai is a wedge. Mm-hmm. Ugin made Garruk come out of the shadows.
Yep. And again, Salumgar, the Drifting Death on the sideboard. So he's one of the new legendary dragons that we've been talking about lately, getting a decent amount of play in these blue-black decks. So I'm
from what I understand, Salumgar is a she.
Oh.
All of the dragons are she's.
Oh, all of them are?
Yes.
Well, that's just sexist. Why do you
Well, I mean, you know, we've got Ugin, who's a male, and he's the big daddy dragon, so.
Okay, that's fine, I guess.
Okay, so it's like a brothel for Ugin? Yeah. Is that basically what it is?
Okay, so Ugin's the pimp. Is that what you're saying?
See, now yeah. I understand why Nicol Bolas and Ugin fought. And it makes so much more sense now.
I don't even want to go down this rabbit hole.
We're
just going to stop this conversation right now and move on, because
it's totally got to go in, though.
Yeah. Oh, that'll stay in. But if we keep going down this rabbit hole, we risk offending pretty much every listener we have. So we're just going to move on. All right. Where the hell were we? Sultai ramp, fifth place. We already talked about sixth place, Abzan aggro. Seventh place, we have an Abzan midrange. Chad, take us home.
All right, this was ran by Dan Muser. It's got 9 creatures, 4 Siege Rhino, 4 Courser of Krufix, and 1 Tassiger the Golden Fang.
That's a boy.
6 Planeswalkers, 3 Elspeth Sun's Champion, 2 Soren Solemn Visitor, and 1 Ugin the Spear Dragon. 26 lands. Yes, I said 26. The most we've seen, I think, since we've started the show.
Probably, yeah.
19 spells, 4 Abzan Charm, 2 Bob Blight, 3 Heroes Downfall, 1 Murderous Cut, 1 Utter End, 2 End Hostilities, 2 Read the Bones, and 4 Thoughtseize. That is the main. In the sideboard, we have 1 Bob Blight, 1 Murderous Cut, 1 Unravel the Aether, 1 Utter End, 1 more Tasker the Golden Fang,
Tasker.
1 Ajani Mentor of Heroes, 1 Liliana Vess, 3 Drown in Sorrow, 3 Glare of Heresy, 2 Read the Bones. I felt like I just read more than 15 cards.
I was just saying, it sounds like you just read off 20 cards.
Yeah, it's like, this guy's cheating. That's basically what it is.
Wow, okay, so this looks very similar to what the Abzan midrange decks were becoming right before Fate Reforged. They were becoming a lot more spell-heavy. You know, you still have your Siege Rhino and your Coursers, and then your Planeswalkers, and then just a bunch of removal. Very similar, just splashing in Ugin and Tassiger.
Yeah, you're banking on Elspeth being in your hand with 3 of them.
Yeah. Surprised with the lack of Valorous Stance. I feel like this is a perfect deck to put that in, but yeah, what do I know?
That makes a lot of sense, especially with your Siege Rhinos.
Yeah, what do you say, Renee? Because you've played Abzan in the past. How do you feel about Valorous Stance being in this deck?
I don't know. The card obviously has some value, but I don't know if it wants to be here. I feel like it's definitely much better in the more aggro builds,
mm-hmm.
but not in the more mid-range builds where you have better spells available.
Okay, I'll give you that.
The one thing I see as I'm looking through it is I wouldn't mind having Valor Stance if I could Valor Stance my Tasker, cast End Hostilities, and then like next turn Murderous Cut and make Tasker get my Siege Rhinos back. Like, just take Delval everything except for Siege Rhinos and make your opponent choose.
That's a pretty elaborate plan there, but yeah, I guess that could work.
Hey man, we just went over Sultai Ramp. That was crazy.
That's true. Alright, so what else we got? In 8th place, we have a Jeskai Aggro, which I called this as well. I said that there was going to be 1 Jeskai deck that was not going to be an Ascendancy deck, and here it is.
Yeah.
We'll just run through this really quick, because it's very similar to the Jeskai decks from before with a couple of new additions. We got 4 Rabble Masters, 4 Mantis Rider, big return there, 4 Seeker of the Way, 2 Stormbreath Dragon, and 2 Shaman of the Great Hunt. This was Chad's sleeper pick last week, so here he is. We got 2 of him in here. 3 Abzan Advantage, a new common from Fate Reforged, which that's the one where your opponent sacrifices an enchantment and you bolster 1. I guess you still can get the bolster because it's targeting your opponent. So even if he doesn't have an enchantment, it could still just be a bolster 1. Seems like a waste of a spell, but we did see all that green-black constellation running around this weekend, so I'm sure it always hits something. Got 2 Dig Through Time, 2 Jeskai Charm, 4 Lightning Strike, 4 Stoke the Flames, 2 Valorous Dance, and 3 Wild Slash. Wild Slash has been getting quite a bit of play, and I'm seeing some people after the fact saying they wish they had put more in their decks or they wish they had put them in the main. So keep an eye on that one as well. It's another Jeskai aggro deck, not too far from what we've seen before. Again, just adding a couple new Fate Reforged cards, so congratulations to him. Looking through the rest of the top 16, just wanted to mention, we've talked about the Green-Black Constellation quite a bit. Looks like most of the Star City Games team was on that Constellation list.
Yeah.
Ron Duin, CVM, Brad Nelson, all playing that same Green-Black Constellation. Did you see this on stream at all?
I did. And Brad Nelson also does a deck tech, so he talks about why he chose what he did. I think the way they went was pretty well placed. Because they're going for Ugin's and Frontier Siege, I don't know for week one. But, I mean, you gotta try. So.
Yeah, it seemed like everybody was trying to throw Ugin at the wall and see if he would stick in each deck.
Yeah.
This seems like a good type of deck to throw him in, because you can generate a lot of mana with all these green creatures and your Eidolons and everything. He's running 4 Frontier Siege, which I don't know. I don't know if I'm too big on that card, but I guess he's also running the 4 Hornet Queen, so the other mode is pretty good too.
I mean, it also triggers Eidolon of Blossoms and Doomwake Giants, so.
Yeah.
So there's definitely benefits to doing it.
And yeah, none of them had that great of a showing though. I think the highest person that placed was Brian Bronduin at 9th. Brad Nelson didn't even crack the top 64, and I think CVM was in the 50s. Yeah, he was 54th, so. You know, maybe it wasn't the right deck choice for the weekend, but I don't think that deck's going anywhere either, so keep an eye on that.
Yeah.
Real quick, in 10th, I wanted to cover this deck. We have Benjamin Nikolic with a Mardu aggro. A lot of people, since Fate Reforged came out, said that Mardu Warriors was going to be a thing, and this was the closest that came to breaking out over the weekend. Real quick, just want to talk about the creatures in here. First off the bat, we have 3 Acroan Hoplites, which before yesterday, I didn't even know that was a creature. Since I didn't play much Theros Limited and he has gotten 0 standard play, he's a 1 red, 1 white for a 1/2. Whenever he attacks, he gets plus X to his attack power, where X is the number of attacking creatures you control. Pretty good in an aggro deck. He's not a warrior though, so he kind of sticks out a little bit. This deck's also running 3 Brutal Horde Chiefs. Your typical Mardu package. Beyond that, 4 Monastery Swift Spears, 4 Goblin Rabble Masters, couple of Butcher of the Hordes, couple of Seeker of the Ways. The rest of the removals looking pretty much like a Mardu list as far as spells and removals go. It's an interesting little build. I don't think that if Mardu is going to have an aggro deck, that this is going to be the best build. But I'm glad Brutal Horde Chief almost made it to top 8.
Yeah, I like the inclusion of the new card or old card, Crown Hoplite, but I don't think it's well suited just because of Wild Slash being printed and all the other removal there is out there.
Yeah, I mean, that's a card that I would expect to pop up in like the red-white tokens deck, but not here in a Mardu.
Yeah.
I mean, at the same time, though, you're putting out the Crone Hoplite, which is an early creature, and it's going to waste those Wild Slashes on that versus something like your Goblin Rabble Masters, which you definitely want to stick around a lot longer.
Yeah.
That's true.
Or your Suspear or your Seeker.
Yep. And, you know, honestly, I could see, like, if you can go uninterrupted a Crowing Hoplite into Goblin Rabble Master, he's going to start attacking for big damage really quick.
Yes.
So, I could see that. It's interesting, and like I said, I didn't even know this was a card until I saw this deck list, because I played 0 Theros Limited. I wasn't even aware of this guy. Interesting. Does anybody else want to talk about any other decks in the top 16?
I do. I want to touch on, let's see if this is it. I just want to do a slight touch on the 11th place, Team Ascendancy.
Oh yes, we saw this quite a bit, especially on day 1 in the Star City.
Yeah, so this is by Mark Topfner, made 11th. And
but he was not the only one playing this deck by far. A lot of people were on this.
And I don't believe he's playing the full combo. So the way it works is, Teemer Ascendancy is a green-red-blue for an enchantment that creatures you control have haste, so remember that. Whenever a creature with power 4 or greater enters the battlefield under your control, you may draw a card. Now, that sounds like the better of the two triggers, but in the case of the combo, it's not. The other piece of the combo is Teemer Sabertooth, which is a
good
new
card.
New card from Fate Reforged. 2 and 2 green for 4/3 creature cat. Pay a 1 and a green. You may return another creature you control to its owner's hand. If you do, Team or Sabretooth gains indestructible until end of turn. Now, the third piece of the puzzle, and there's a couple ways you can do this. One is with Voyaging Satyr and Nykthos. Another way is with Karametra's Acolyte. What you do is you bounce your Voyaging Satyr or the Acolyte after triggering Nykthos or the Acolyte to give you devotion mana symbols, and it comes back into your hand. You cast it again. Now it has haste. You can do it again for an infinite mana. You dump this into, let's say, a Pelucranus that you have in your hand or on the field. You can kill everything in the way for infinite, and it has haste.
And then swing in for infinite.
Swing in for infinite. These decks also run Nylea, God of the Hunt, or Genesis Hydra if you want to see your entire deck. And then just put down a Nylea and have a Genesis Hydra with a million and trample. So it's pretty disgusting. It was debuted as a deck tech by, forget the name, I'll find it later. But it looks pretty good. It seems like it just needs to be tweaked in the right deck, but it's a pretty good combo that they found out.
Yeah, and I would expect to see this a lot at your local FNMs. I don't know how much we're going to see this on the national stage, but you can believe that a lot of your local players are going to see this and want to play this, and they're going to be taking this to FNM. So if that's all you do, if you're just an FNM grinder, be ready for this matchup.
Yeah, and not only that, this is the first week of the SCG or any standard for that matter. So them coming out with a new combo, it seems like it was just like when Jeskai Ascendancy was revealed. So kudos to the developer.
Yeah, and you know, you talked about the Teamer Sabretooth. I thought that card was good anyway before somebody figured out an infinite loop with it. It was just a very solid, very good card. You know, we played against it in Limited in our two-headed giant, and it put in some work, man, and I respected that card after that weekend, and I thought it had a place in Standard. I didn't realize it was going to be in a combo deck like this, though.
Yeah. I thought I was so clever with my Teamer, Sabretooth, and Humble Defector combo going on in Limited.
Yeah.
Never mind. I'm back up now.
I'll just touch on this since we're talking about it. I drafted this last weekend, and my opponent had a Teamer, Sabretooth, and a Siege Rhino. So that was fun to try and play against.
Ouch.
More on that later. Renee, you had mentioned wanting to talk about the 28th place deck. Is that right?
I did. Can we take a break real quick, though?
Sure.
Awesome. I'll be right back.
While Renee is taking a break, I also wanted to touch on the blue-black control list in 14th. Blue-black control is one of my possible options going forward for playing in Standard. And this is Ryan Frainer.
It's a PH Rainer. Instead of an F, so nobody Rainer. Knows how to say it.
Yeah.
That's basically, so you did.
Oh, speaking of people not knowing how to say things, how many times on stream did Patrick Sullivan botch the name of Valorous Stance? He kept calling it something else. He kept calling it, like, did you hear that at all, Chad?
I must have missed it, but.
Oh my god, he kept calling it, especially even in the finals. In the finals, he'd probably seen this card 100 times over the weekend, and he was calling it, like, Valorous Siege or Valorous something else, and he kept saying the wrong name, and it was driving me crazy.
Maybe they did it on purpose. Maybe that's just another conspiracy.
It could be. You know, I question these Star City people. You know, I thought these guys were supposed to be the best of the best, but now I'm not so sure. Anyway, blue-black control, 14th place. This guy's running 1 Prolake Ancient, 1 Salumgar, Drifting Death. There he is again. For Planeswalkers, he's running 1 Ugin the Spirit Dragon. For spells, he's running 2 Perilous Vaults, so we can't be rid of those just yet. 4 Bile Blight, 4 Dig Through Time, 3 Disdainful Stroke, 4 Dissolve, 4 Heroes Downfall, 2 Jace's Ingenuity, 1 Murderous Cut, 3 Crux of Fate, that's my card, and 2 Thoughtseize. Chad, real quick, what do you think about the main on this guy?
I like the main. I'm looking at the lands, which is crazy, because this is a lot more than...
Wait, how many lands is he running?
28 lands!
Oh my god!
I mean, I thought we got away from, we're not doing Legacy, are we? We're not doing a lands deck?
Yeah, no, this isn't lands. This is an actual control deck.
Alright, so he's running 28 lands. I just need to touch on this really quick. He's running 5 islands, 6 swamps, 1 bloodstained mire, 4 Dismal Black Backwater, 1 Flooded Strand, 4 Polluted Delta, only two Radiant Fountains. Mm-hmm. So that kind of throws me off with Pearl Lake Ancient. 4 Temple of Deceit, 1 Urborg, Tomb of Yawgmoth.
Well, I mean, he's only got 28 lands, so he needs to get his fixing in there somewhere. You know, he can't just run 4 colorless lands out of his 28, right?
Yeah,
That was sarcasm, by the way.
I know, I just don't, I'm still grasping this number, 28. I mean,
14th. I mean, it's got to be something, right?
He did. Why not take out 3 lands and put in 3 more Ugins? Because that seems a lot better right now.
So I'm actually going to break this deck down a little more in my article on mtgbrodeals.com this week. So watch for that, and I'll make my own changes and tell you what I would be running if I play this deck. So Renee is back with us, is she not?
I am. Hey. Yeah, there we go. I did hit the button.
Everything all right?
Yeah, okay. I'm good.
All right, so we left off with the 28th place deck, so go ahead with it.
Okay, well, it's Mono Green Devotion, which I love, and it's piloted by Kali Anderson, who is actually Todd Anderson's wife, from what I understand.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah. And she's running 27 creatures, so 4 Elvish Mystic, 4 Genesis Hydra, 3 Hornet Queen, 4 Sylvan Caryatid, 4 Voyaging Satyr, 4 Courser of Kruphix, 4 Pelucranos World Eater.
Okay, so before you go any farther, this is true mono green devotion. This is not what some people have been calling green devotion in the past, where they've been splashing blue or black or both. This is straight up all green.
This is all green all the time. All
right, go ahead.
Except for coming up. we've got 2 Nissa Worldwaker.
Nice.
And then 3 Ugin the Spirit Dragon, who doesn't have a color, so we're just making him an honorary green thing.
Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
And then as far as lands go, we have 24, 16 forests, 4 Wooded Foothills, and 4 Nykthos. Probably could have played any fetch that wants to go get green, but whatever. I'm not entirely sure why the fetch is in there either, besides maybe to make it a dude.
Or just thin out the deck.
Yeah.
Just try and reduce the amount of lands you draw.
All right. And then for spells, because we're not quite at 60 yet, we have 4 Frontier Siege.
There it is.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to get a lot of devotion, and we want to make a lot of big dudes.
Yep. And we don't want to cast non-creature spells.
No.
Or non-planeswalker spells.
No. Green mages don't deal with that.
So, all right. Yeah, this seems good. You know, and I'm honestly surprised we didn't see more just straight up mono green devotion lists in this top 64.
Me too. I also, like, it's also neat because she has the Hornet's Nest on the board.
Mm-hmm.
So she can have dudes appear that way and trigger the Frontier Siege as well.
Yeah. So I have a question. So she's got the 4 Whisperwood Elementals in the sideboard.
Yeah.
You would think that of all decks, this would be the deck that you would actually want those in the main.
Agreed.
Because you're almost always going to be flipping over either a land or a creature with that manifest. And I think you'd be happy with either one, right?
I definitely think that would case is what you want, but I think it's another instance of not wanting to try too much new stuff too fast.
Okay.
I didn't see this on camera at all, so hopefully we'll get some feedback through Twitter about how she decided to put this in and what she took out for it. And that kind of information, but
okay. Now,
as of right now, I don't know.
All
right,
now you sound like you're roboting quite a bit. Is that me, or is that on your end? All right, and hopefully it was just a little hiccup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, and did you talk about the sideboard?
I talked about the Hornet's Nest and the 4 Whisperwood Elementals. She's also got 4 Liaison, which is awesome against aggro. Then we've got 3 Reclamation Sage. And a lot now.
Yep.
Okay.
So yeah, you're a robot in a little bit there. The Terminator has come back to
kill
Nissa Worldwaker before she can make all the creatures take over.
Yeah.
all right. So yeah, I like the deck. That's something I would play for sure. Again, I'm surprised it didn't make more of a showing, but you know, decks like that can also really tank to control decks.
Yeah.
So, and we're seeing a lot more control in this top 64, so that could be why. And something else, I would have liked, at least in the sideboard, to have seen a couple of Corda Callings.
I guess, like, most of the guys you would want to tap for Cord are also tapping for mana, so why take up the slot?
Yeah. Well, just so you could dig for stuff, but that's fine. So that was just a fraction of the different decks that we saw at the Star City Open. You know, we saw 7 different deck types in the top 8, which is great. It's getting us back to this very wide open standard. How do you guys feel now? Now that we have the first weekend in the bag, what do you think so far of standard of what you're seeing?
I feel like Wizards knows exactly where they want to go with everything, and it might be due to them hiring players, which is really good. But going forward, I think we're going to see this. Every new card that's produced is going to want to get played, because when Cons was released, it changed the format so much that everybody wanted to drift back to Standard instead of going to Modern or Legacy. And now that Fates Reforged has been released, it's the same thing again. It's just making Standard that much better.
Yep. All right, so this week we had no Grand Prix. In fact, we're not going to have another Standard Grand Prix until the weekend of February 14th and 15th. So for the next couple of weeks, we're stuck with Star City. And what is Star City's format for next week?
I think it's Standard again.
Okay, that's good. Because if next week was not Standard, we'd be hurting.
We have an open in Indianapolis.
It's Legacy.
Okay. But we have the regional championships next week. So I don't know how much coverage those are going to get or when we're going to see the deck lists from those. I know it's not like states where there's one in every state. This is only in bigger regions, so we're not going to list all of them here.
There are 10. I'll be at Philly. I think, Chad, you said you would be at Philly as well.
Yeah, but that's in 2 weeks, isn't it?
No, that's regionals.
What am I thinking of?
I don't know.
No, not next week. The week after, the 7th.
Okay, so the 7th is regionals.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's just the 7th. I'm sorry.
Yes, and I will be attending that.
Yeah, I made a mistake. I clicked next weekend thinking that it was going to be this next coming weekend, but no, they're talking the following weekend.
Gotcha. Yeah, we're a little late this week.
Yeah. Yeah, we're recording on Monday because of certain individuals who have to work Sunday nights sometimes.
Ooh, yeah. Who working on the weekend?
Who does that?
<That's> me.
All right, but we did have one other event this weekend. Renee, why don't you tell us what else we had?
So we had the Super Sunday Series Championships this weekend.
The Super Alliteration.
Yes.
Series.
Yes. How much do we hate Renee and want to make her say a bunch of S words yes. to each other? So that happened. And for those who don't know, the Super Sunday series takes place on the Sundays after GPs. There's typically one in Standard and Modern. They have some really good prize payout, typically all meant just to take place on Sunday. And it's really there to keep people around after Saturday if they don't make day two. So you still have a bunch of really good players participating. I know someone from our local area wound up in the Super Sunday series and actually made the top 8.
Oh, really?
Yes, and we'll get into that in a minute. But beyond that, it's just a bunch of really good players getting together. They all went out to Wizards, I believe, to actually do this. Or maybe it was at PAX South. It was somebody not at a Grand Prix.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they went to Wizards HQ. And actually played for a prize total payout of $6,000.
Nice. And so. I'm just looking real quick. I'm just curious how many players were actually in this. And it looks like it was 24 players?
I think that sounds about right, yeah.
24. Let me just make sure. Or it could be 48. Okay, there were 22 pairings. So there were 44 people total.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So it's not a very big tournament. It's almost, at this point, it's kind of almost even more prestigious than the Pro Tour because of the size of people. And that's kind of what this is okay, well, you missed out on the Grand Prix to get to the Pro Tour. Well, here's this other elite thing.
Yeah. So, all right, so let's look at some deck lists here. What do we got?
Okay, well, we did have quite a bit of the normal amount of stuff. We had Louis Salvato, who took it all, and he was playing, actually, some our favorite red-white.
Just the red-white aggro?
Yeah. So he's got 2 Chandra, 4 Seeker of the Way, 4 Rabble Master, 3 Brahmas, 2 Ashcloud Phoenix, 4 Stormbreath Dragons, and he actually is playing Valorous Stance. So.
Yep, 2 Valorous Stance, so yeah. Besides that, you know, your typical red-white aggro deck that we were seeing before.
Yes, and a lot of these aren't super revolutionary. We have Oscar, who is playing a red-green devotion.
And I do want to point out, he's running 2 Outpost Siege in the sideboard.
Oh, so good times.
Yeah, continue.
Oscar Christensen came in 2nd with a red-green devotion type deck. It's definitely heavier on the green, but it's playing 2 Yasova Dragonclaw, which is really exciting to see.
Nice.
Yeah.
And actually goes really well on this deck.
Which, yeah. I don't think we saw her much at all at the SCG.
Nope. No. and then also a Become Amends, which, you know, is always spicy.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was, I think, just one other deck I wanted to talk about, which is actually the fifth place Chaz Hinkle, who is actually the local player from my area. He goes to one of the Alternate Universes locations. If Alternate Universes is having a big event, he's always there to help out. He's a really cool guy. So he was actually playing an Abzan deck with a Warden of the First Tree. And then
it's a Warden of the First Tree.
Yes, a Warden. But it's more on the aggro side, and he also has a Herald of Torment.
Yeah.
So the top of his curve is Wingmate Rock. And he has three, and I'm not sure if three is the right choice, but I guess...
We saw that in the Star City, too. The third place deck had three Wingmate Rocks.
I'm still very meh on three Wingmate Rocks. I don't even like two, let alone three. Everything else is mostly in that two or three drop slot.
Yeah. So, all right. So, yeah, we'll have the link for this in the show notes, too. I didn't even know about this event until Renee had brought it up earlier today. Thank you for that, because it gives us a little bit different of a perspective beyond the Star City Open and what was going on over there. So,
yeah. You
know, we got some different deck lists for just something different that was going on. And we also have the deck lists for the event that you played in over the weekend. I don't think we're going to have time to cover them here. Maybe we'll do it on the Facebook group. We'll kind of down on there.
We can do that, or I don't want to post the entire deck list, but I can certainly post the archetypes.
Yeah, something like that. So we'll take a look at those over the next couple of days and figure out a way to get them out to the masses. And Renee will talk about that event that she played in here in a little while.
Yes.
As far as Magic Online, Fate Reforged is not out yet on Magic Online, so we're not even going to delve into deck lists on there.
Delve.
Yes. See what I did there? Totally on purpose, too. The pre-releases this weekend, I'll certainly be on there playing. Chad, you going to play in any online pre-releases?
Yeah, I'm going to see if I can get to a couple of them.
Okay, and Renee, you're still down on MTGO, right?
I have an account, so I might get on and see if things have gotten better for me.
Yeah.
Well,
did you play in your free holiday cube?
No.
Oh.
No, I'm really bad about that.
It's all right, you still have the tickets, so you're still good.
Yeah.
Sweet, I'll just use it towards the pre-release.
Yeah, well, it should be like Phantom tickets, so you can play in Phantom events, I think. Something like that.
Oh, whatever.
Anyway. Moving on to some listener deck lists. First, I want to give a shout out to Roger Ballmer. We talked about his Sultai list last week. It was Sultai, right?
Yes.
Yep. And he posted on the Facebook group that he made top 8 with it at an IQ, which I think he said was 30-something people. And he also went 4-0 at his local FNM with that same deck. So good job, Roger. Keep us updated on how it's going with that and if you make any changes. Wanted to talk about a couple of different listeners' deck lists this week. First, we had Jonathan Yang, who is from Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. Beautiful country. I've been there at least once. Wouldn't mind going again at some point. So, Jonathan, thank you for listening, and glad you're enjoying us from all the way over there. Does somebody want to cover Jonathan's list?
Sure. He's running a Sultai Reanimator list. So the creatures are 4 Sylvan Caryatid, 4 Satyr Wayfinder, 4 Courser of Krufix, 4 Sidisi Brood Tyrant, mm-hmm. 3 Tassigar the Golden Fang.
There he is.
2 Doomwake Giant. 2 Hornet Queen. 1 Soul of Innistrad. 1 Torrent Elemental. And going into his spells, he's got 4 Murderous Cut, 3 Heroes Downfall, 3 Whip of Erebos, 2 Thoughtseize, and let's see how many lands he's running. 25 lands. He's running 25 lands. I was counting.
Yep. So this is actually very similar to Roger's deck that we went over last week, but he's running the 1 Torrent Elemental, which I agree with. Yeah, you know, I think Roger was running 2, and I like 1. I think that's the perfect amount for this deck.
Yeah, I agree with that statement.
And 3 Tassigar, he's the man.
Yeah, I think running 1 Torrent Elemental with Sidisi is great because Tasker and Murderous Cut are easily going to get him out into the exile zone.
So, yeah, and in the sideboard, nothing too cosmic, I don't think. A couple of Crux of Fate.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's he said he made top 8 of a local PPTQ, and he actually had to drop out due to an illness. So, sorry to hear that, Jonathan. Hope you feel better, and hope you knock him dead next time. He said his only loss was to a mono-red aggro deck, which makes sense.
And he said the mono-red aggro list that he played against happened to win it all, so if he didn't get sick, he probably could have won.
Next list I want to talk about is from Rich Summers. He's actually a local player at Ron's Comic World. He's always been known as a brewer. He makes his own decks. He doesn't do any net decking at all. He only ever wants to do his own stuff. And even before Abzan was a word, he always played junk, or he always played Abzan. In older formats, doesn't matter. He was always a junk player. But he's recently been going towards like red-green or teamer. So I just wanted to touch on his red-green monsters deck that he's got. So it's 4 Elvish Mystics, 3 Rattleclaw Mystic, 4 Heir of the Wilds, 4 Goblin Rattlemaster, 4 Shaman of the Great Hunt Chad, 1 Pulis Crusher, 3 Ashcloud Phoenix, 2 Hooded Hydra, 3 Stormbreath Dragon, 2 Whisperwood Elemental, 30 creatures in all. For spells, he's got 3 Crater's Claws, 3 Wild Call, I don't even know what the heck that is, and one Shamanic Revelation. So what is Wild Call?
Wild Call is Manifest Genesis Hydra.
Okay, so ready? I got it up.
Okay.
Go for it.
It is green, green X. Sorcery. Yep. Manifest the top card of your library, then put X11 counters on it.
Oh, okay. So I guess if you're ramping into this, it's pretty decent. And he's also running 2 Whisperwood Elementals, so he's got the Manifest going. He's got a crap ton of creatures, only 23 lands. He said he went 3-1 at the local FNM with this. I can't remember what he said he lost to, but he posted this list in the group and talked about it a little bit.
I like that he's running the Shamanic Revelation.
Yeah. I'm curious.
All those draws.
Yeah, I'm curious if like he ever just went nuts with that and drew like 5 cards and gained like 20 life. You know?
Yeah.
That would be amazing. One thing that he told me, I was talking to him about it, he said Pulis Crusher was an absolute house. He said that was the MVP of the deck by far because, again, of all the enchantments running around. It's got protection. You know, you can't kill it with things like Chain to the Rocks. He blocks all of those.
Well, Chain to the Rocks doesn't kill it. It exiles it. But
you
yeah,
know
you
what I
target.
Meant, Renee. getting me
Blame
semantics
Trevor.
Right? Yeah.
All those rules lawyering.
Oh, yes. We're talking to the person who's married to the judge, so all right. I'll give you that.
Thank you.
So yeah, he said Pulis Crusher was by far the MVP of this deck. And yeah, we'll post this in the show notes as well. And yeah, congrats to Rich. And like I said, he's a local guy, big brewer, good guy. He's got a bit of a temper on him, but you know, that's forgivable because he's a nice guy. So. moving on, we talked about, or on the Facebook group, I did an impromptu contest earlier last week. That's what we were talking about, how I picked red-white tokens to win the whole Star City. I basically told anybody on the Facebook group, choose what decks are going to make the top 8, and whoever got closest would win a Bloodstained Mire that I was going to put up. Well, I also said that you were going to be going up against the rest of the cast, so Chad and myself also put our predictions up, and I don't believe, Renee, you put anything up, did you?
No, I saw it, and I kept meaning to, and then I had I was supposed to have a presentation today, so I spent all week last week focusing on that, and then this weekend I spent all weekend playing, so I was never at a computer to really, type anything out.
Yeah, but it was all for naught anyway, as Chad and I ended up being the two closest to selecting the right top 8. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to hold on to this Bloodstained Mire, and I'm going to do another contest exclusive to the Facebook group at some point in the next couple of weeks. So keep an ear open for that.
I mean, us placing first and second makes it look really good that we're doing the podcast.
You would think. I mean, I guess it makes us look like we might actually know what we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
No, really, we're just full of crap.
We marginally know what's going on.
Yeah, I'll go with that one.
Let's hop right into our 3 questions for the cast. Every week, each member of the cast asks a question, and all 3 of us answer. And one of these questions always ends up being our listener poll question for the week. Speaking of which, guys, I'm a little disappointed this week. I think we got 2 or 3 responses on the poll, so got to step it up. We may have to start offering prizes again for the best answers because, yeah, 2 and 3 isn't going to cut it. So,
but maybe everyone was busy brewing.
That is true. A lot of stuff going on in the world of Magic over the last week. So,
but it was interesting because 2/3 of our poll said Salumgar, and then I want to know if the person who picked Atarka was just doing it to get into my favor.
Yeah, and just to refresh people's memories, the question was, which of the five legendary two-color dragons did you think was going to get the most play in the over the next 3 months? And I think I actually picked...
You picked the blue-white.
Why am I drawing a blank on the name?
Ojutai?
Ojutai, yes.
That is why you're drawing a blank on the name.
Yes. But Salumgar is clearly the leader already, so we'll see how this pans out over the next month or two. But anyway, we've got more questions this week. Let's start off with Chad. Chad, what do you got for us?
All right, so my question for you guys is, when you have time to watch during the weekend Magic being played, I mean, even during the week, if you have a certain person on Twitch that you watch, who presents their program better? So if you want to add a other category to this, that's fine. But would you choose SCG or Wizards of the Coast for their Twitch streaming performances?
All right, so I would have to go... SCG definitely has the better production quality, but I find that I am just getting bored of the same presenters all the time. I used to like it a lot more when we would rotate presenters out once a week or once every other week.
With, so, like, Patrick Chapin coming on sometimes?
Yeah, and they used to have like 6 or 7 people who would routinely come on, and they've limited that down to 3 now. And I feel like I'm getting the same people's ideas.
Jesus.
Yeah.
What the hell was that?
I had a cat jump in my lap.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm just tired of hearing those same 3 people. So I'll actually find myself turning on Wizards coverage more often to get different views on things.
Gotcha. Jason?
All right. Well, if you had asked me this question about a year ago, I would have said the clear winner was Star City. Because at the time, Wizards production was pretty terrible. Their video quality sucked. Their commentators sucked. It was not good all around. But I think they've drastically improved over the last year, especially with their video quality. And, you know, they've got the hand cam, I guess you would call it, where they have another camera that's looking at the player's hands as they're playing, and they've got that sidebar that tells you what's in each player's hand, where Star City doesn't do that. And I agree with Renee, too, where the commentators are starting to get to me. Like, Chad and I were talking while you were away, that Patrick Sullivan bugged the crap out of me because he kept botching the name of Valorous Dance, even in the finals of the Open.
Yeah.
Come on, you guys are supposed to be better than that.
That's not to say that Wizards doesn't do that, because I know Marshall Sutcliffe makes some big mistakes when it comes to card names.
Oh, yeah, and a lot of people hate a lot of the Wizards commentators, but Star City has always allegedly been the top dog, and they certainly don't act like it sometimes. So I'll pick Wizards, just because I like where they're going, and I don't like the direction Star City's going.
Okay. I'm going to disagree with you both. I choose to prefer Star City games only because, sometimes when I'm doing, mowing the lawn or doing something where I can't actually view it, I can put it on my phone and put in my headset. And when Patrick Sullivan or Cedric Phillips go through the commentaries, even though they add in their own spiel, which is fine, they almost say each play. So, and I feel like Wizards doesn't do that as much. You have to watch which cards are played. You have to see which cards are in their hand. But Patrick Sullivan and Cedric Phillips kind of tell you what's going on and what play they would have made.
Okay, so you like it better because you can just listen and know exactly what's going on as opposed to having to actually see what's going on.
Exactly.
Okay.
I don't know if that's like... So I was thinking of it in terms of visual aspects, because to me, I throw it on my TV through Chromecast.
Nice.
And do things throughout the house, and, you know, I can hear it and see it.
Mm-hmm.
But to just listen to it, I don't think I'd be able to do that with anything besides a podcast where we actually do go through each thing individually.
Yeah.
Just because I'd get so frustrated and be like, what is actually going on?
All right, fair enough. I'll ask the next question. My question for you guys is, will Gerard Fabiano's Sultai Control deck that took the SCG Open this week continue making the top 8 of these SCG Opens and other big tournaments, or is this just a flash in the pan? Renee, what do you think?
I think the deck certainly has somewhere to go, especially now that he can take it back and other people can grab a hold of it and sit there and tweak it a little bit more. I'm hoping that it won't be the only deck people are playing next week. But I definitely think it has legs to stand on and will continue to top eight in some fashion, even if it's not the exact list.
Okay. Jed?
I think it's going to be seen everywhere. I have a feeling that not only because Gerard Farmiano is a big name, but also because he's going to write about it and explain exactly his process. So people are going to become more comfortable, almost as if you don't have to play test as much, so you can just take it in. Because he's told you how he played against certain decks.
Okay. And yeah, I think so too, but I think it'll be a heavily modified version of the deck. You look at the list and it seems decent for the first week, but I think people are going to tweak it quite a bit and tune it. And I think you'll see something that's got, you know, 65 to 70 of the same cards, but not the exact 75 for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So moving on, Renee, what you got?
All right, so a little bit of backstory. This weekend I played a deck that I had brewed, and I did terrible. So for the rest of the weekend I was kind of mopey and feeling like I wasn't a good Magic player, and I know I'm not a good deck brewer, but I thought I would at least be able to pilot this thing. Mm-hmm. And really I just kind of felt depressed and inadequate, especially looking at, you know, how people are talking on Twitter of certain professionals or even their own weekend events, and it was just terrible. So my question is, how do you feel with feelings of inadequacy when it comes to the game?
Well, I can say right now, I have that exact same feeling a decent amount of time. You know, if I go to an FNM or like a PPTQ or something and I just kind of tank, I really do kind of feel bad about myself. Again, thinking I should be at that next level. I shouldn't be scrubbing out of these events like this. But, you know, sometimes it happens. The way I deal with it is I have to take a step back, and I actually have to step away from the game for a day or so, because otherwise I'm just going to sit and stew about it. And, you know, I am going to do things, like you said, like go on Twitter and see how other people are doing better than me and other people are successful, and that would only just kind of eat at me more. I feel like I just have to take a step back, not think about Magic for a day, like don't think about it at all on Saturday, and then maybe revisit it on Sunday, start thinking about, you know, what deck can I play that'll pilot better, you know, something to that effect. But, you know, I know exactly how you feel. I've been in that exact same situation before. And for me, it just helps to just kind of like go do something else for a little while.
Yeah, I seem to overanalyze myself very much in my normal day to day. And when I do happen to have bad games or bad matches or rounds, I end up looking back at exactly which cards caused that, and I tend to blame, like, it seems like I blame certain cards, like this card was causing me to be slow, even though playing against so many versions of so many decks, every card can do well. So I feel like I have an inadequacy when I lose, but I don't fully take it to the next game unless I'm able to develop a better strategy.
So what about you, Renee? I mean, do you have a way to deal with it, or are you just kind of, you just like get in a rut and?
Well, alright, so since we're doing, the MTG Bro Deals challenge, I guess I can talk about this a little bit, where I am bipolar, so I definitely like grab onto these certain feelings and just spin them around in my head a lot. And it's very hard to break. Like, just that whole thought process is extremely hard to break, and this is something that is actually incredibly hard for me to do. So, like, this past weekend, instead of talking about Standard, like, just in my household, I can't stop thinking about Magic either. I turn and there's a Magic card. Like, it just doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. So instead of talking about Standard, we shifted and talked about EDH and Tiny Leaders, which helped me stop, it stopped that process of just repetitively thinking about it.
Yeah.
And this coming weekend, I don't even think I'm going to play Standard besides maybe FNM, but, I've been having a lot of fun in this limited format, and, there's a sealed PPTQ that I'll be going to. I'll be skipping over the Standard IQ, I think, to both watch the Super Bowl with my dad and just to not step away from Standard for a bit.
Yeah.
And not completely, like, I'm definitely going to be watching the stuff and trying to formulate a new deck because I promised myself I'd be making a new deck every month. But just to have that breathing room and not be playing it and feel terrible, I think, is the goal here.
There you go. Yeah, just the big thing is just try not to dwell on it, you know? Even if you have to think about a different format in Magic, just, you know, don't sit there and stew over, you know, one particular event or one particular match. You know, otherwise you're going to drive yourself crazy.
Yeah.
So, all right, on that note, you know, you talked about what we're doing this weekend and what we're playing. What is everyone playing now? Fate Reforged is out. We should have, we've seen the first weekend of results, so we should have an idea for what we want to do, where we want to be. So, guys, what are you playing?
I'm still looking to assemble my Jeskai tokens. So I still need some Soulfire Grandmasters, which I plan on buying a box. So going forward, I might get them. But I'm looking to put that together.
Yeah, and only one copy of him was in the top eight, so his price should start going down pretty quick.
Yeah.
Because clearly he was not the breakout star that a lot of people thought he would be.
He's still really good.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm not disputing that, but I just don't think he's $25 Mythic good.
I think it's people are wanting to look at him for the more Eternal formats.
Yeah, and I agree. So what about you, Renee? You did play in one event already. You looking at anything in the future?
Well,
or is this part of the whole not doing standard for a while?
I do have the limited PPTQ at Days and Night in Newark, Delaware. Mm-hmm. Trevor is judging the IQ, so I'll have a Sunday to myself for the most part if I do decide not to play and, you know, actually stick to this plan. I might do FNM, and then next week, I need to play at some point because I need to practice for regionals.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So forward your deck ideas to...
Yo, we should have the listeners pick what deck you're going to play. That's what we need to do.
Wow.
We need to put a poll out there. Wait until, like, next week SCG results come out so we have a wider range of decks. You know, you can narrow it down to, like, the top eight that you would play and then have everybody else pick for you.
We could certainly do that, but we'd need to do it, like, we'd need to have the poll posted on Saturday.
Yeah.
Okay. And then have it so that I can know by Wednesday.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, we'll talk about this a little bit offline, see if this is something we can actually manage. For me, I proxied up a Black-White Warriors deck because that was my first inclination. With Fate Reforged was a Black-White Warriors deck with, you know, obviously Brutal Horde Chief, and then your champion guys, the warrior guys, the Chiefs of the Edge and Chief of the Scale.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, proxy that up. Did not go very well in testing. I intentionally wanted to play against a guy who was playing a Red-White aggro deck and a guy who was playing a Jeskai aggro deck. A couple guys at my store are good players, and I wanted to get a good feel because I felt like those were going to be my worst matchups, and they really were, and I got stomped pretty bad because of the amount of removal that those decks play. You know, they play your full suite of lightning strikes, your magma sprays, now they're running the new wild slash and the collateral damage, so the Black-White Warriors just isn't there. Ideally, if you could get, you know, the guy that gives all your guys extra toughness, you might be able to survive, but in all of my games, it was never close. I might have stolen one out of six games testing against each of those decks, so it really didn't go well. I don't think Black-White Warriors is the way to go right now. I'm not even sure if Mardu Warriors is, so from here, I might go back to just straight-up Mardu mid-range, or maybe a more Mardu control-ish. You know, going like Crux of Fate, more Planeswalkers, more removal, and then just, you know, less on the creatures.
So for you, instead of doing the Black-White Warriors, I saw a lot of people playing Red-White Tokens.
Yes, and that was another possibility for me, and it still is high on the list. The only problem is I don't have any Monastery Mentors, and I don't know if I want to drop $100 for a set of those. So.
Fair point.
Yeah, I did pre-order a bunch of cards, though, from Star City, and some that I do plan on playing. Like, I did get a set of Crux of Fate. I got my set of Tassigers. So I may just end up going with the control deck right out the gate. Maybe go with the blue-black like I thought about, throwing in Tassigers, Salumgars, stuff like that. So we'll see. I'll keep you updated, but right now I'm still kind of up in the air. And we'll roll right into local tournament reports. So, Renee, we've hinted quite a bit at the Winamox event that you played in, so go ahead and give us the lowdown on that.
All right, so we had a top eight that was actually pretty wide open. In the top eight, we had Blue White Heroic, Red White, I want to call it almost Burn, but it's not quite Burn. It has a Stormbreath Dragon, four Stormbreath Dragons in it. Ooh. So I guess it's more of that Red White aggro type thing.
Yeah, that's kind of like a big red aggro.
Yeah.
White in it, though.
And then we had Jeskai Tokens, another, Jeskai deck that had Mantis Riders and Goblin Rabble Masters. And then we had, what's this one? Abzan Super Friends, which is exciting to see.
Yeah.
And then we had somebody who called their deck for the Horde. So it's,
I don't like him already.
Why?
That is who you should like.
I know. Right?
Are you talking Warcraft?
Yeah, when I hear For the Horde, I have lots of bad Warcraft memories come up, so.
Well, he's playing for Rabble Master, for Monastery Mentor, and for Brutal Horde Chief.
Wow.
Man.
That sounds nice.
Now, that makes me want to get those Monastery Mentors and try that out.
And this is almost, like you were talking about, almost that Mardu control-ish type deck.
Yeah.
So, and then we had, what's this person playing? They have Soulfire Grandmasters and Brimaz, and instead of Big Red, it's almost Big White.
Oh.
So it's a Hushwing Griff, Soulfire, Brimaz, Seeker of the Way, Goblin Rabble Master, Ashcloud Phoenix, Chandra, Stormbreath, Chain to the Rocks, etc., etc.
Is he running Nykthos?
No.
Ah, that's too bad because, yeah, Soulfire Grandmaster with a Nykthos might be pretty good.
Yes. So we did have a lot of red white, and then what is this last, and then a teamer control deck, which was really interesting to watch. Where it had a Rattleclaw Mystic Kiora, Lightning Strike, Stormbreath Dragons, Polis Crushers, Prophet of Kerfix so that you're untapping every turn, and just a whole bunch of very interesting cards that you didn't think about seeing together. And then a Nykthos.
Nice.
And, I think I remember him doing pretty well in the top eight as well. So.
Very good. Now, how did you personally do in this?
I 0-3 dropped.
And this was with the deck you said you brewed yourself?
Yeah, so I wound up brewing this red-green, what I had wanted to be a rampy type deck, to get to Atarka, because I really just wanted to play with Atarka.
Yeah.
And I figured even if I couldn't land Atarka, I had Nylea, Xenagod, and Polukernos, which is a really good combination.
Yeah.
But I just couldn't ever get those pieces together on the field. I went up against a lot of burn. I went up against a red deck wins with goblin token generators, just like all goblin tokens, and goblin heel cutters. Like he was literally playing goblin tribal. A lot of Porphyros at the store where, you know, you put a token into play and it deals 2 damage to you.
Or you put 3 tokens into play and it does 6.
Yeah, that too. That happens quite a bit. So I was pretty miserable because I hate going up against red decks like that.
Yeah.
Burn decks bum me out.
Yeah, it can be frustrating because there was a point where at Ron's where a good portion of the players were all just playing red aggressive decks and it was a pain because historically I play decks that don't have a good red deck matchup, but they have a good matchup against everything else. So.
But we had a total of 21 players, so the mocks did go into the prize pool.
Oh, good.
And then there was a box given to second place, a half a box given to third and fourth, and then 9 packs to 5 through 8.
Very nice.
So, really good prize turnout, really good turnout in general. The same store is having an IQ this Sunday. Definitely recommend going, because they do typically have really good prize payout to at least the top 8, if not farther, for the more people they get, so.
All right. Chad, did you do anything at all this weekend? Any online? Anything?
No, this weekend I just worked. I'm not hitting MTGO until next week for the pre-release, and then I'm going to be hitting it hard when the new set comes out.
Very good. Alright, and I did not play Standard this last week. I did draft at my local F&M. I went to a different store this week. I went to Outside the Box Games, which is literally 5 minutes from my house. They don't play a lot of Standard there, though, so I haven't been going lately, but I knew I wasn't playing Standard since my pre-ordered cards hadn't come in. So they did a weird draft. They did a Fate Cons Fate draft, which was very odd, but I did fairly well. I drafted an Abzan deck, and I went 2-0-1. The person I tied against was the guy I had mentioned earlier who had the Siege Rhino and the one Wildcat that bounced it. We ended up going to time in round one, and then I won my next two matches, and then some heavy snow started rolling in, so they closed the store and finished it there. I ended up with two prize packs. It was fun. I do like this limited, like Renee said, but we are not a limited podcast, so I need to get off my butt and get into some standard matches. Same as Chad, I will be playing in some Fate Reforged pre-releases on Magic Online this weekend, as well as playing standard somewhere. I'm not sure where yet. And actually, at Ron's Comic World, they're doing a double PTQ weekend. It's the same thing where it's a regular PTQ standard followed by a PPTQ for those who scrub out of it. I think it's Saturday, so I'm going to try and go to that.
Nice.
And that's really it. Guys, first week of Fate Reforged. First week of the podcast having a new set hit standards. So what do you guys think? Any last words on Fate Reforged?
I love the set. I love the way Wizards is going, and more dragons the better.
Yeah.
I really like the tools that this set gave us. I don't think it's anything super revolutionary, but I think it's pieces that will boost decks that were making appearances, but maybe not consistently.
Yeah. And yeah, some surprises this week, I think. Like we were talking about before, one Soulfire Grandmaster made the entire top eight. That was a card that had a lot of buzz going into the weekend. Only one deck running Monastery Mentor. So some cards that we thought were going to be big so far have not been, but that doesn't mean they're not going to. Of course, Ugin was everywhere. Tassiger was everywhere.
Yep.
As far as the pricing, I expect the price of most cards to go down from here. Tassiger, though, I think he may continue to go up because I think he's got some eternal play value in him.
I can see that.
I see him not quite as good, but very Tarmogoyf-ish.
Yeah.
I definitely agree. I'm actually looking at putting him in my junk deck with Doran, just as a one-of, because it makes him big.
Yeah. So
him and Tarmogoyf wouldn't be a bad set together.
Well, see, I don't know, because they kind of work against each other, delving away the cards that Tarmogoyf needs. But, like, if you're playing in a Tarmogoyf-heavy, like, modern meta, you know, you can cast your Tassiger with the delve and get rid of all the fuel for the Tarmogoyf.
That's a good point.
You drop a big guy, their guy gets smaller. I like that. It sucks he's legendary. I think that's the only thing keeping him from being just completely bonkers. But at the same time, as you guys are playing, if you're trading, if you're playing limited and you pick up some Tassigers, keep your playset. Like, get yourself a playset, not necessarily buy it, but trade for them, get them in prize packs, whatever, and then keep at least one playset before you start trading them away, because I don't think he's going anywhere. I think we're going to see him for a long time.
I also want to point out that Warden of the First Tree, which everyone thought was going to plummet as soon as it came out, has held its value.
Oh, has he?
Yes. He hasn't gone down at all since I pre-ordered him.
Okay.
So,
oh, you
he's still at $10. Yeah. I got my set of him
good,
today.
Good. Yeah, I haven't really looked much at prices beyond Tassiger. I know Ugin's also increased a little bit. He's back above $30 buyout price, if I'm not mistaken. So I expect all of these to go down eventually, but some of them are ticking up a little bit. Anyway, so that was the first week of Fate Reforged. This has been episode 9 of Higher Standards. Next week, we are officially a real podcast, so I'm very excited about that. We're going to have to do something to celebrate.
We're legitimate.
That's right. Yeah. So hopefully we didn't miss anything this week. If so, we'll make it up on the Facebook group. Again, if you're not on the Facebook group, please join up. You know, we got a lot of good people on there. We're getting a lot of good, interesting discussions, a lot of good tournament reports.
Yeah, there's never dead time.
No. In fact, our Facebook group has kind of caused me to stop posting on pretty much every other Facebook group I was involved in, which is not a bad thing, because I enjoy it. I like all the people we have on there, and I'm looking forward to getting more. And like I said, I did a Facebook group exclusive contest this week, so if you weren't on the group, you're missing out. So.
And I even post about it on Twitter. Like, I just did one post saying you need to come join our Facebook group.
Yep.
And I think we got a couple of people joined up through that way this week. So either follow the Twitter if you don't want to always be on Facebook, or, you know, let us know. Get on the Facebook.
Yep, absolutely. So with that, we're going to close it out. Guys, thanks for joining us, and we will be back recording next Sunday night, hopefully having the podcast out by Monday morning. And with that, Chad, Renee, thanks, guys. See everybody later.
See ya.
We'll be back.